Count your blessings, ladies and gentlemen, because this is Brian Pillman Jr., and you're listening to the most influential podcast. You're listening to the Pro Wrestling Proverbs.
As previously mentioned, we're at the 40th anniversary of the birth of Hulkamania. Now, in that part one I told you about happened before Hulkamania, like I said, you don't want to hear about, you know, 8-9 WrestleMania matches, going up in Florida on the Viper, winning the WCW title his first night, doing the NWO, you know, the shoot with him and Russo. You don't want that.
No.
You want you want the fun stuff. So after WCW went under, Hogan underwent knee surgery, which you hear a lot. And he actually had a match November 14th, 2001 for the XWF, the Excitement Wrestling Federation, which is pretty much everyone from WCW that Vince didn't hire before TNA hired them. He defeated Kurt Hennig in a match, and he felt healthy enough to accept an offer to return to the WWF. Of course, came back with NWO, had a great match with The Rock, still one that I see as one of the best of all time, won the Undisputed title, won the tag titles with Edge, had the WrestleMania 19 just brawl with McMahon, became Mr. America, and then on screen, Vince fired Mr. America because he, you know, flipped his mask up, showed the fans. It was Hulk Hogan. What really happened was Hogan had been upset about payoffs after his comeback under the Mr. America gimmick. Because, you know, he's Hulk Hogan, brother. He was also frustrated with the creative team by having him be Mr. America. I'm sure he would have reverted back to Hogan had he waited a few months. Dusty Rhodes did this with the Midnight Rider. Ric Flair did this with the Black Scorpion in the same vein. I mean, but Hogan's gonna Hogan. He returned, he showed back up in New Japan in October of 2003, and he defeated Masahiro Chono, a Japanese mainstay, one of the leaders of the NWO Japan, at the Tokyo Dome. And also in 2003 is when TNA started making, you know, they wanted Hogan to come in. The big rumor, the big story is the one night that Savage was supposed to be on the show, Hogan was there, and they had to make sure security kept him apart because Savage wanted to knock his block. When Hogan was in Japan, Jeff Jarrett attacked Hogan with a guitar, and this was supposed to be a precursor to them battling for the NWA title, which made sense because Jarrett was a Russo guy. He kind of took after Hogan in WCW, that kind of thing. And it was supposed to be their first three-hour pay-per-view. But Hogan had recurring knee and hip problems, and he did not appear in TNA. This clip, though, was shown everywhere, and it's actually in their TNA 50 Greatest Moments. Hogan came back to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, saved Eugene a couple times, fought Shawn Michaels, or teamed with Shawn Michaels first, then fought Shawn Michaels, fought Carlito, inducted Mean Gene into the Hall of Fame in 2006, fought Randy Orton, which was his final wrestling match in the WWE. He had negotiations to come back for not only WrestleMania 23, where he was supposed to fight Big Show in a, you know, Hogan-Andre redux, and then he was also supposed to fight Cena at WrestleMania 25. Both of these fell through. I would have loved to have seen Hogan live at 23. Still pissed off Ric Flair was only on the pre-show, but whatever. And then Hogan and Cena in 25, that would have been money. So much money, because Hogan was still in shape at the time. And you don't need to be that ring-ready for a Hogan-Cena match.
No.
Like, as good as they both are, they both literally have as many moves as I have fingers. And this is before Cena started trolling fans by doing the top rope leg drop, the Hurricanrana, that kind of thing. The Canadian Destroyer. So it would have been a hard-hitting match. Sure. I'm assuming Cena would have won but Hogan probably would have been upset about it. It's crazy to think his last match was against Randy Orton in the WWF anyway, so Orton is a legend killer. He went to Memphis because, you know, he had a brief fallout with McMahon because of, again, payoffs and matches, even though they wanted him to fight Cena, and before that he fought Orton, and before that it was Michaels, and so he's always facing good people. He might not be the main event, but he's always in a good feud, but Hogan had to be main event. He went to Memphis Wrestling because, you know, Jerry Lawler knows how to pick up WWE scraps. And it was supposed to be Hogan and Lawler. And Lawler announced a news conference, or he announced in the news conference that WWE barred him from wrestling Hogan, you know, because of all the contractual issues. It's funny that this happened because Lawler was replaced by Paul White, better known as the Big Show. So a small Memphis crowd got Hogan and Big Show on April 27th, 2007. The same month the two were originally supposed to fight at 23. Love it. He kind of piddled around there, 2007, 2008. He then did a tour. Hulkamania, Let the Battle Begin. This tour included Matt Cross, who's an indie guy, Heidenreich, Eugene, Brutus Beefcake, Orlando Jordan. This was across Australia. And the main event of each show was Hogan and Flair, because Ric Flair was the man who defeated Hogan more times than any other. Hogan defeated Flair in all four of the matches. This is to say, this isn't new for Ric Flair. When Hogan and Savage were both brought into WCW, he jobbed to them because he was the only one that they wanted a job to, or that they felt comfortable wrestling, and Bischoff was okay with it. So let's take the guy that's been the flag bearer for years and have him lose to these two. I thought it'd be fun to let you know the match card. I think we talked about this on the Ric Flair one, but night one, you had Eugene and the Godfather defeating a team called the Rock of Love. Brutus Beefcake defeated Heidenreich. Matt Cross defeated Shannon Moore. The Nasty Boys, remember, 2009, defeated Gangrel and a wrestler known as the Black Pearl, who was a member of the Anoa'i family. Ken Kennedy defeated Sean Morley, who is Val Venus, the crazed fucking loony guy now. Brian Christopher, better known as Grandmaster Sexay, and Rikishi, so two cool reunion, defeated Orlando Jordan and Umaga, who was wrestling as Osu Fatu, and Hogan defeated Flair. The next night, we got Too Cool defeating Rock of Love, Shannon Moore defeating Matt Cross, Rosie, who was wrestling under Big Daddy Roro, defeated Val Venus and the Godfather, Black Pearl, Heidenreich, and Gangrel defeated the Nasty Boys and Eugene, Orlando Jordan defeated Mr. Kennedy, Umaga defeated Brutus Beefcake, Hogan defeated Flair. Hogan always had Jimmy Hart. Ric Flair had Lacey Von Erich. And it was these guys for the next four nights. Or for all four nights, excuse me. So the next two after this. If you can't tell, which I know you didn't watch TNA a lot, when Hogan came to TNA, he brought with him Shannon Moore, the Nasty Boys, John Morley, Mr. Anderson, Orlando Jordan.
I also do know from his TNA days, he also brought a lot of plants in the stands.
Yes.
That's one thing I do know about his TNA run is there's just suspiciously a bunch of people in Hulk Hogan branded merchandise.
Yep.
In camera view at all times.
Yeah, so on October 27th, 2009, Hogan, it was announced he signed a contract to TNA. And they did the press conference at Madison Square Garden. He announced on UFC's Ultimate Fighter he'd make his TNA debut on January 4th, 2010. Talk about striking when it's hot, huh? And a special three-hour Monday Night Raw episode to compete with Raw, which Raw, of course, had Bret Hart on it when Bret Hart first came back. And Hogan claims they did that because of him debuting on Impact. That's wrong. Bret Hart coming back had been planned for about a year at that point. But, you know, Hogan will be Hogan. That January 4th episode, he debuted. He briefly reunited with Kevin Nash, Sean Waltman, and a bad-looking Scott Hall. It was Hall and Waltman's return to the company as well, and he refused to join for a reunion of the group, claiming it's a different time. And Bischoff was, of course, with him. Everyone would have to earn their spot, and it kind of went down from there. February 18th, he took Abyss under his wing, giving him his Hall of Fame ring and claiming it made him a god of wrestling. So, in TNA, what makes you a god of wrestling is having a WWE Hall of Fame ring. He made his in-ring return March 8th, teaming with Abyss to defeat AJ Styles and Ric Flair. And afterward, Jeff Hardy ended up joining him. Then we got a Team Flair versus Team Hogan situation. And Jarrett and Rob Van Dam join Team Hogan. Beer Money and Sting join Team Flair. So Hogan, Abyss, Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy, and Rob Van Dam defeated Ric Flair, Sting, Desmond Wolfe, who's better known as Nigel McGuinness, and Beer Money. Just baffles me how much TNA just buried the shit out of their talent when Hogan came in. Oh, and then it just keeps going down. Abyss abruptly turned heel and claimed that an entity was coming to TNA. Hogan worked with Bischoff, Jeff Jarrett, and Samoa Joe against Sting and Nash, who claimed they knew Hogan and Bischoff were up to something. And Abyss went on a rampage, taking out Rob Van Dam, who actually wasn't signed to enough dates to continue his heavyweight championship run. Oh, man. Hogan was supposed to wrestle some more, but had to miss time due to a back surgery. It's rumored he was going to be a TNA heavyweight champion. And then everything hit the fan. Hardy, Bischoff, and Abyss and Jarrett joined, and they were immortal. So everyone that was, you know, feuding with Hogan at one point, now a team, now the bad guys, now they're NWO. And they feuded with Fortune, which was Ric Flair's Four Horsemen group of Styles, Daniels, Kaz, Beer Money, and Desmond Wolfe. And they tried rehashing the NWO and the Four Horsemen. It didn't work. Hogan eventually had potentially career-ending spinal fusion surgery, December 21st, 2010. So remember that, as everyone keeps wanting him to come back. Even myself. But this was 2010. We're 14 years later. I don't think he's doing it. He came back in 2011, declaring himself the new owner of TNA, having won a court battle against Dixie Carter. And he began hinting at a possible return to the ring to face Sting. Hogan, of course, lost control of the company to Mick Foley, who revealed himself as a network consultant. And Foley had been causing problems for Immortal forever. But this angle was cut short a few weeks later, as Foley left the promotion. Hogan continued to interfere in Sting's matches. And after hinting at a retirement, Hogan accepted a match at Bound for Glory. And he agreed to hand TNA back to Dixie Carter if Sting won. Hogan was defeated by Sting. And Immortal attacked Sting, but Hogan turned face. He turned on Immortal and helped Sting, brother, wearing his trademark red and yellow, admitting his mistakes, and putting over Sting. Hogan actually did return to the ring some more at house shows. He, James Storm, and Sting defeated Bobby Roode, Bully Ray, and Kurt Angle. This was Hogan's final match. He returned to Impact, where he was revealed as Garrett Bischoff's trainer, blah, 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 yada, 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 aces and eights. They attacked Hogan. They wrote him off screen. Bully Ray was banging his daughter. Hogan finally gave the okay for Bully Ray to bang his daughter. Then Bully Ray was the leader of Aces and Eights. Whole wedding was a scam. Before that, Taz said it was hot in here. Sting and Hogan reconciled. And what's hilarious is his last moments in Impact. After declining a contract in real life, he declined one from Dixie Carter and quit the promotion on screen. Walking up the ramp and leaving with Dixie Carter dragging behind him, holding his leg. So that was the end of Hulk Hogan and TNA. He eventually returned back to the WWE, of course, with the WWE Network. Helped host WrestleMania 30 at the Silver Dome. Had multiple Hogan nights, Madison Square Garden nights. Took out Axelmania. Reunited with the NWO at WrestleMania 31. Everything's looking good for the Hulkster. Red and yellow, black and white. You can't stop him. Well, I mentioned black and white. Let's just say at this time we found out if Hogan would have had his way, the NWO would have been just white. You know what I'm saying, brother?
Brother. At least, I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
I wouldn't. It's interesting to read. Virgil said Hogan has never given me a reason to believe he is racist. Dennis Rodman said he most certainly is not a racist. And Kamala said, I do not think Hogan meant harm by saying that. Hogan is my brother until he decides not to be. But the people in WWE seem to think different. Mark Henry said he was pleased by WWE's no-tolerance approach to racism, as are we. It's one of those things where when it first happened, you saw he was fired and you didn't hear why yet. And then you saw and you're like, oh, that makes sense. Booker T said he was shocked and called the statements unfortunate. They terminated Hogan's contract and they started to kind of erase him. He wasn't a judge for Tough Enough anymore. His merch in the WWE shop was gone. His entry from the WWE Hall of Fame page was down, even though he was still listed in the encyclopedia. His DLC for 2K15 was taken down, and his character was cut from the upcoming 2016 game. Which it makes sense now that I'm reading this, that 2K15 was taken down, because I remember I bought some DLC for your PS4.
Yeah.
And Hogan was on it.
Yeah, he did.
And I went home, and because I had it on PS3, and I'm like, I'm going to get the Hogan. And by that time, Hogan was gone. And I always thought, I'm like, wow, why would they make Hogan like PS4 only? Now that I'm kind of going back through this, it makes sense. All of his stuff got taken down. And in further reports, it turned out he also used homophobic slurs on a leaked sex tape. Things went from sky high for the Hulkster to very, very low.
A very disappointing sex tape at that.
Yeah.
It was not very impressive.
But as always, since Vince McMahon was at the helm, Hulk Hogan was welcomed back with open arms. July 15th, 2018, he was reinstated into the Hall of Fame. Later that night, he was invited backstage to the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And he made his on-screen return November 2nd, 2018. He was the host of Crown Jewel. He next appeared for a tribute for Mean Gene Okerlund. And he appeared on a network special. He ended up inducting Brutus Beefcake into the Hall of Fame, which could almost be a scandal in itself. And then he made a surprise appearance at the beginning of the show alongside Alexa Bliss at WrestleMania 35. Hogan was a speaker at the Toast of Raw. And of course, they set up that awesome Hogan versus Flair 10-man tag at Crown Jewel. Yeah, because who'd have thought that the team of led by Hogan and Roman Reigns would win? About that time is when Hogan started saying he wanted to have one more match in WWE. They tossed him a bone by inducting him into the Hall of Fame with the New World Order with Nash, Hall, and Waltman. And he ended up making other appearances, on satellite, on screen, mostly legends. My favorite, which I forgot to mention, was first Hall or his happy birthday, and Brock Lesnar told him, "The party's over, Grandpa."
I remember that.
Hogan,
He was
Hogan kept
so
me.
pissed.
Oh yeah, he was, and I like how Paul Orndorff was. It was Orndorff and Piper that like stepped up to Lesnar. It wasn't Nash. Wasn't anyone like that. It was those two. He kept appearing in legend segments, and it was announced he would co-host WrestleMania 37, which has that great photo of Hogan and Titus O'Neil in pirate outfits. He also appeared with Jimmy Hart to open the 30th anniversary of Raw. But since returning this last time, he has not gotten the response that Hogan used to get, which is definitely understandable,
Yeah.
having both racist and homophobic remarks. Now, and then you can always tell, he's kind of like the old man that gets in trouble with his family, and then when he tries to, he's like, "Why are you mad at me?" And I get it. He thinks his wrestling should overshadow what he did, which it shouldn't. Not in the slightest. I did hear that they're going to try and bring him back again because it's his 40th anniversary, as I said, the birth of Hulkamania. I would have to imagine he would be at WrestleMania in some capacity. 40 years of WrestleMania. Hulk Hogan was involved with a quarter of them. I've told you before, I think my perfect WrestleMania, they do like WrestleMania 30, but they have it with Hogan, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold, John Cena, because those five pretty much were in every main event, not counting the ones with Roman Reigns. And it would just make sense. I do think Hogan's trying to be better, but I don't think his interviews are helping. As I said, him talking about being one of the people to discover the Undertaker or slamming the 800-pound giant, being a bassist for Metallica, discovering Brock Lesnar, which we've touched on a little. Not a good look, Hulkster. It's definitely been a tough, pretty much past 10 years for him, really. His mouth just keeps getting him into more and more trouble. I mean, it sucks because he and Flair are my like two favorites, right? And they both just keep putting their fucking foot in their mouth.
Rough favorites to have there, Logan.
Yeah, it's one of those things where
Your third favorite, Satan.
like 20 years ago, right? You say you're a wrestling fan and you're like, "Oh, I like Hogan and Flair," and people are like, "Yeah."
Yeah, cool.
And now it's like, "I like Hogan and Flair," and it's, "Oh, okay." Which sucks because, I mean, my others are all dead. Legion of Doom, Piper, Dusty. So I'm stuck with these guys. But as I mentioned before, I don't know if it was on the first part, if it was just off the record. If the Rumble happened, if Hogan came out to Real American, I would be glued to the television set. I know it can't. Besides, he walks with a cane. He can't drop a leg drop. He can't do a big boot. He can't get thrown over the top rope. My biggest worry is that he is somehow going to help Cody finish the story, and it's just going to take away everything from Cody because Hogan has to be there. I will say an interesting fact I found while getting stuff ready for these. 2023, Chris Jericho said on his podcast, "Hogan was a better worker than Flair in his experience." Here's the quote: Hogan is a better worker than Flair for me. I always had amazing matches with Hogan because he knew exactly who he was as a babyface, as a heel, whatever. He was so great. He knew his audience. He didn't do anything he didn't have to. It was one of my favorite times in my career. When Jericho fought Hogan, Hogan was in that career renaissance when he was fighting for the Undisputed title. Middle of 2002. Main event. The only time I'm sure of that Jericho fought Flair, also in that same time period, but as we know, Flair wasn't sure of himself. He wasn't the Nature Boy fully yet. So I just think this is Jericho kind of picking the wrong battle. Jericho's another one of those in that group of Flair, Hogan, him. They just, Kane even, they kind of just keep putting their foot in their mouth. But it's not about those guys. We're talking about Hulk Hogan here. 30th anniversary. Hopefully, part one, and now this part two, can help kind of bookend his career for his fans. Because like I said, I know that, you know, people know about beating the Iron Sheik, his feuds with Andre, Heenan, Savage, Warrior, Kevin Sullivan of the Dungeon of Doom, being with the NWO, his match with Goldberg, his comeback, his match with The Rock. But after that, a lot of people don't really, not really sure of Hogan. And if you can't get enough of Hulk Hogan, don't ever forget that outside of wrestling, he's a, I'm going to put this in quotes, movie star. Besides Rocky III, you've got No Holds Barred, Gremlins 2, Suburban Commando, Mr. Nanny, Thunder in Paradise, Spy Hard, The Secret Agent Club, Santa with Muscles, Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain, The Ultimate Weapon, Muppets from Space, Ayo, Little Hercules, and then finally, his last role, a voice role, in Romeo and Juliet. So, I mean, can't get enough of wrestling, Hulk Hogan. There's always, always actor Hulk Hogan.
You forgot my favorite Hulk Hogan.
What?
You know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're talking the Bubba the Love Sponge tape.
No. The one of him after he had some sort of surgery and the nurses wanted to make sure he could shit. So he's like still drugged out, sitting on the toilet, taking a shit. He's like, I'm just dropping a steamer. And he says to post it on Twitter. That's my favorite Hogan.
Yeah, he doesn't make the best choices. I know I didn't touch on the Gawker lawsuit, but there's a whole Netflix on that. I know I didn't touch on Hogan Knows Best. I feel like that's been beaten to the ground, especially since, you know, Brooks kind of failed at everything she's done. Nick's a fuck up, and his wife was kind of awful. I'm glad to see he's finally found love again. You know, at least he's got that going for him. With this being his 40th year, I'm sure this will probably be one of the last times we truly see Hogan in the limelight. He's getting up there. I hope they do enough of a tribute for it, because like I said, I know he's not the best guy, but in the wrestling landscape, he's got to be on your Mount Rushmore. Like, he's got to be. Hogan, Flair, Austin, Cena. It's got to be the four.
Yeah.
And he's got to be right at the top. And if you disagree, I want you to give me a reason besides his out-of-the-ring issues. And when you can't, I'll be here waiting. Not the biggest Hogan fan, but I do know what he's done for the business. Even though in this episode I did touch in his later years and how they weren't the best. But there's very few individuals that can have a later year resume like Sting and The Undertaker. So just remember, whether he comes out at the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, when it comes crashing down and it hurts inside, that's our Hulk Hogan.